Welcome to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. This podcast is all about conversations about healing and rising from the ashes of your grief and trauma. In this podcast, we will be deconstructing and highlighting the different aspects of grief and loss. I'm your host, Dr. Christina Zampatella. Welcome to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. I am your host, Dr. Christina Zampatella, and today we are blessed with Samantha Gambale attending and sharing with us her thoughts on caregivers, and specifically working with people who are caregivers of those with loved ones with that are chronically ill and terminally ill too, and the important aspects and the dynamics and the importance of how those individuals can be supported and what might be expected and what even might be surprising to be not expected. But without, you know, further ado, I just want to maybe give our audience an opportunity to get a little bit of background about you, and then let's go ahead and talk about caregivers.
So I'm Samantha. As we talked in the last episode, I've had a lot of experience in the hospice field, also relating over, though, to the caregivers. I used to facilitate a dementia support group, and just meeting with families in general has really, and being a caregiver has really opened my insight to all the different aspects of caregiving, as we've touched, sandwich generation of caregiving. Right now, I think a lot of us maybe have children, older parents or grandparents that we're caring for. So I really wanted to bring to attention the light of the impact that caregiving has and the support that is needed throughout it. One thing that I really want to point out that why it's so important is that 30% estimated of caregivers die before the person they're caring for if they have increased stress, isolation, depression, many things that I think a lot of caregivers are kind of forced into. So it's really important to raise awareness of the support and the emotions that you may be going through and to reach out and understand some of this so that we don't reach that point of burning ourselves out, that we become that 30% or what have you.
Yeah, that sounds kind of important, 30%. And they're attributing that to having additional stressors.
Yeah, and because caregivers will have a tendency to focus on being the caregiver, so they will neglect their own needs, their own doctor's appointments, their own everything, because they have to attend to this other individual. And if they don't, sometimes there's the feelings of guilt that I'm not being a perfect caregiver. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to be here present 24/7 in order to be a good caregiver. Mm-hmm. And then they completely neglect their own needs. Like, you can see weight loss, weight gain, you know, irritability, depression, isolation. A lot of factors just start to increase that put them at even higher risk for more health, physiological, mental concerns. So I wanted to just bring light to that.
Yeah,
so that
I think it's important. Yeah. Our bodies speak our minds and our hearts, that for sure. Sometimes that's the way we share it. So why don't we start with how are we defining what a caregiver is, or who a caregiver is?
So a caregiver is anybody that is essentially taking care of the daily needs, or maybe not daily. Some people are still caregivers and would go in, visit someone like in a nursing home. You're still, you know, caring for your loved one, managing their financial, like your guardian, all of those aspects. Okay. But also there's the caregivers that are daily taking care of their loved ones.
On the front line.
Front line. There we go. In the trenches, they are cleaning, bathing, shopping, doing everything for their loved one. Maybe they have an hour to leave the house in order to do anything that they like can, but in the back of their mind, they're still worried about their loved one back home. And so one of the things I really wanted to highlight was the need for support during caregiving, because as we talked, as a risk factor of isolation, you can't do it all on your own. Mm-hmm. And that's what people try to do, because they're scared to ask for help. but you can't do it all on your own.
Or they don't know where to ask for help.
Or where to ask for help.
Because I will say, I guess in my own research in this field or in this this topic, one of the things that ends up happening is that the systems in which we are embedded are not identifying what kind of resources are out there that are available to the person. That person may not even be aware that there are resources. Mm-hmm. So if the system isn't aware, and maybe the system isn't even aware of them. Mm-hmm. So if there's this lack of communication between the medical community, the very confusing medical terminology that's used, because it's like medical ease. Mm-hmm. It's like you need a flip and interpreter to be able to understand what the hell the doctors are talking about sometimes. And there might not be, like you, a social worker available to say, hold on, this is what this means. Mm-hmm. So there's no, the person's like, oh my God, this is, I should know this stuff. I'm in the hospital or whatever that is. And that's a whole different thing. But if we don't have a system in place, maybe we live in a community that doesn't have funding to have systems that are in place, we have people who are overloaded who maybe are working in hospice, and because it's a industry at this point and is losing its humanity, people may not be getting the resources that they need. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, they don't know that, I may not have like a lot of family around, I'm elderly, my children are kind of spread out across the United States or whatever. And I am, on the front line, who can I turn to for support? Mm-hmm. So that's a huge part is what I'm hearing you say. It's like, how do you take care of yourself when you don't even know that there are resources to help give you a little bit of a respite from taking care of the person who has the chronic illness?
Respite. Which is exactly what I was going to highlight, the importance of respite. So they do have adult daycares for some, but also in-home caregivers, if that's like what you're seeking. I recognize that in the same breath, financially, it's really hard for a lot of people to manage to fork out money to take care of their loved one just so that they can carve out their self-care time. So that's another.
So there's no financial support for people like there is for hospice, and we talked about Medicare, but for respite care, you only get,
for caregivers, I mean, you would have to go through a waiver program to be eligible for out of pocket.
Wow.
From at least, unless someone can bestow some knowledge onto me, but that's just kind of what we've seen is like being paid out of pocket. A waiver will cover a certain amount of hours. If you need additional, like, or 24/7 care, you can be facing that bill. The other alternative
Who has that that kind of money?
Well, that's where
you're mortgaging your fucking home in order to be able to take care of somebody and to. Because guess what? You need to be able to take a shower. You need to be able to go run errands. Who's going to get the food? I mean, all of these things become more complicated for people.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I think that's where that 30% that we are touching on, like, because you self-neglect, like, because of all of, it's all on you. Like, it's not, unless you do have a good support network, you're very lucky, because typically it does fall on one person do all the caregiving for the family member, and some people will sporadically come by. So I always encourage people, if they can, have, when people do offer, because some people like to offer but not follow up, but actually have them, hey, can you actually pick up these groceries or sit with mom, dad, whoever, for an hour so I can do this. If you can't afford a aid, but again, you'd be lucky to have such a thing.
Well, you need to work. What if you have to go to work?
Exactly. 60% of caregivers are in the workforce on top of that. So it's another risk factor. Like, it's a compiling stressors, right? Like, that you can't get a break
from. Well, and what if you had a really contentious relationship with the person who's dying? And it's like, now I'm supposed to take care of you, and you abused me as I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. And we...
I've seen it happen.
And the abuse can even continue through from the actual person that you're caregiving for. And it's hard not to sometimes feel resentment, but also in the same breath, sometimes we feel guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they pass, relief.
Yep.
Because so much of our identity can sometimes be wrapped into becoming this caregiver role because it is so intensive. Mm-hmm. It becomes a new routine, a new normal, a new self-identification. I every day go and do this for my loved one, or, you know, this is what my life revolves around. I wake up, I do this for them, you know, lunchtime this, evening that, so that when that person does pass, like, who am I outside of this role mm-hmm. of being a caregiver?
And it's like that. Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen. Like, I've talked with people, like, every single day for the last 15 to 20 mm-hmm. years, my wife had MS mm-hmm. and I was her caregiver. And then when she died, all of mm-hmm. a sudden, I didn't know what the hell I'm supposed to do with myself.
All this free time.
Mm-hmm. And I'm relieved about the fact that she's no longer suffering. And I'm relieved actually that I actually have time to do things. And then immediately guilt mm-hmm. will follow after that mm-hmm. to feel and, with the relief.
And then, yeah, and yeah. then relief that they're no longer in the situation they are, but then feeling guilt right. that they're dead.
Right.
It's like,
exactly.
And so part of, I feel like it's like, that's valid. Like that's part of being a caregiver, the anticipatory, but also those feelings of when that person does pass that you're caring for, if, you know, they do pass. Those are all valid mm-hmm. emotions to experience. It's a spectrum. Like you like oscillate between yeah. the grief, the relief, and then trying to find your new normal, your new self outside mm-hmm. of being a caregiver. Because I think what we're trying to highlight here is that being a caregiver is so intensive, it really can become part of your like identity during absolutely. That time, because it's hard to do anything outside of, like,
if we do get help, we're lucky.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're not doing other things with your time, it can be even more challenging. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm a caregiver, but guess what? I also work part-time as a social worker, mm-hmm. you know, over here. So there's another, we live by identities. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, what other identities do I have? I'm a wife, I'm a, you know, stepmom, I'm a, mm-hmm. you know, a daughter, a sister, all of, and, you know, I'm a friend, I'm a boss sometimes when I can pull that off.
You're a boss.
I'm bossing it over here. and so it ends up becoming if I don't have other identities outside mm-hmm. of this, so then that gets smashed mm-hmm. as well. And my whole narrative just completely blows up mm-hmm. because my identity has been blown up. Mm-hmm. And now I've got to figure out how to pull that narrative back together to try to figure out who am I now that I've had this change. Mm-hmm. And like you know, like we said, it could have been a very contentious relationship, or it could have been a very loving, wonderful, close relationship. And the loss of that person now has thrown you into this other kind of crisis of, you know, this was my person. Mm-hmm. Who's my person now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like
with dementia, the long goodbye. Like yeah. as people change, ooh, like
yeah.
who are they? And like,
The ambiguous loss
yes,
along the way.
Yes. And as they change, and then some of the guilts that people feel as their loved one with dementia is no longer themselves, and you don't have that companionship. And some people choose to date as a caregiver and the guilt associated with that. But
right.
is that person really cognizant to what's going on? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're humans. We need companionship. Mm-hmm. So when you're a caregiver, all you are is... not all you are. You define yourself through your caregiving right. role, and you're not in the receiving end. It's just like wringing yourself dry.
Right.
So there has to be a support back. I think I may have touched like support groups in caregiving is huge. Like, because so many people are going through this experience yet feel so isolated. Mm-hmm. They don't even realize that there are support groups of so many people, like the Alzheimer's Association. They would do, I would facilitate the virtual groups because they can't even leave the house. You see in the background their loved one because they have to attend to right. the person with dementia. So like trying to accommodate to that. But again, that's where their life is at. They have to meet this rule, like that role for that individual, down to where even I've seen you have to relocate to a place where they can get the care that they need. And you're living like in a separate entity, like assisted living, because you're not at that point, but they're a skilled nursing like facility. So you're still caregiving and have that strain and that responsibility, but you really don't belong in like this assisted living facility, but you're here because your spouse is.
Wow.
So you are trying to help them have that aging, you know, somewhere close to you. You can still maintain that connection, but.
And watching your loved one that may have been very robust and very engaged, like having these losses along the way, the living losses, right? Mm-hmm. So you have, and tell me, I don't know if this was your experience, but I remember when I was doing some research and also working with somebody who was struggling with chronic illness. I'd done several presentations with the Scleroderma Association, which is a disease in which your connective tissues and like become hardened. So like you're slowly like becoming imprisoned in your own body. And one of the things that is often overlooked are the sexual needs, the intimacy needs of those individuals who do have chronic illness, because they take on the identity of the ill person. Mm-hmm. And you forget that like intimacy, and that doesn't have to mean, you know, having sex, but the intimacy needs of being touched gently, maybe being snuggled and held. What if it's painful for the person and or not, or maybe you're not seeing me in that role anymore and I'm your wife. Mm-hmm. And we've lost that part. So you have so many losses that are disenfranchised because they may not even be identified as being a loss in the first place. Mm-hmm. Well, you're alive, you know? Yeah. But I can't sleep in my own bed because I'm in this hospital bed in the middle of the living room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. And I think the isolating factor too is like people are uncomfortable with it, like seeing that. And then the role development, like that changes, like you kind of touched on it. Like you can go from being like a husband, wife, and then the caregiver role, like, and how that transitions, and then the loss associated with that. Mm-hmm. It's transparent. Like, you're no longer just their wife, their husband. You're taking on the role of caring for them, but also your home, the teamwork aspect. It's, like, all compounding, which can lead, again, to caregiver burnout, which I think is why the statistics are so high. Yeah. People are putting themselves on the back burner to take care of somebody else. And there's this pressure to be the perfect caregiver. Mm-hmm. And there is no such thing.
Right.
There is no, some people say there's like a guidebook. Like, I understand there can be tips, but nobody's perfect.
No, I think there's too many mediating factors that make the relationship and the situation very idiosyncratic, so very individualized. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can give you some tips. I can say, hey, generally you want to make sure that you're out there in the community, or you're at least aware that there are community resources. But there's other things like, you know, are you with the person who is dying or who is chronically ill? Mm-hmm. Like, are they being compliant with their medications? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because what does it mean to be on medications like that? Mm-hmm. I know with me with epilepsy, and I take that medication every day. I fucking hate taking that medication every single day. I hate it. Mm-hmm. Twice a day, I am reminded, yep, that is part of what I struggle with. Mm-hmm. That is part of my chronic illness. That's technically life-threatening. Not easy, you know what I mean? So, you know, do I want to be compliant with it? Well, I have no choice, but do I want to? No, because every single time I take it, I'm reminded of having this chronic illness. Mm-hmm. That's just my process, you know.
And you're spot on, because a lot of people that become, like we touched on earlier, at some point we're all either going to be cared for or be a caregiver.
Yeah.
And when we're the ones that are being cared for, you're feeling that stripped away, like your health, your mobility, all of these independence. And unfortunately, the person you're closest to is probably your caregiver and gets the brunt of the out of control feeling that you're experiencing of losing your abilities. Yeah. They're grieving too, the loss of their bodies. And as a caregiver, you're grieving with them, watching them change.
And our futures. We didn't plan for me to have early onset Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now all the things of the travel we told we were going to, you mm-hmm. know, we told ourselves we were going to have when we, you know, retired, and the grandchildren that we were going to have, like all those things. And you're watching them being slowly stripped away. If the person has, you know, a progressive terminal illness, mm-hmm. or if you have an illness that while it might be stable, that keeps you from being able to do things in your life, like, you know, go hiking and do things that physically, you know, would have hoped you would have been able to do otherwise.
I've heard people that are the ones being taken care of express it as being disappointed that life is ending this way.
Or that they've or they're disappointing the person that's the caregiver.
Mm-hmm. Being a burden.
Being a burden.
Mm-hmm. And losing your independence as your world gets smaller.
Yep.
But also so does the caregiver's world get smaller because they have to caregive. So as you, as the person that has the illness, your world shrinks. So does the caregiver because they're attending to. But our goal would be to get the caregiver out of the house to prevent that burnout, to have some respite, and to be able to attend also just beyond the role of the caregiver.
What if they're scared to leave?
Which a lot of people are scared to leave their loved one. Right? Because when you do leave, in the back of your head, it's a rush to get back just in case.
Just in case.
Just in case. If you don't have that help, if you don't have someone watching, that can be that moment that something happens.
Thank you for listening to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it, subscribe, and leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. We want to be a resource for anyone who is experiencing loss, and this is a simple way you can help us spread the word. Check out our show description. There you'll find a link to connect with me on social media, as well as helpful articles and resources.